Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
From Middle America, somewhere in Middle America, anyway, where it's still chilly, but we're into a new season, a little bit closer to spring, and I turned green on my profile picture. For those of you that are Facebook friends, I couldn't stand it any longer, the lack of color that we were having, but welcome to the show tonight. I'm so glad to have you all here. For those of you who are new around these parts, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. The front portion of the show is always a featured guest, and the back portion is open mic where you can call in and talk about what's on your heart and mind, interspersed with some great music from independent artists, many of whom have had their lives touched by brain injury. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, and I want to give a shout out to the show sponsor, and that's braininjurytrial.com. If balance is one of the issues you've had because of your brain injury, you really want to check out their website, Brain Injury Trial, or call them, if you got a pen there, 877-847-4284, and be part of the phase three of their clinical trial of this device, not a drug, that has had remarkable results helping people with mild to moderate brain injury and their balance issues, including Montel Williams. Some of you heard him on the show about a month ago talking about it. And so if balance is one of your issues, check it out. We're kicking off the beginning of Brain Injury Awareness Month. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month, and happy March to those of you that just came in. My guest tonight, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, some of you who might have seen the program notes saw that I put "not your grandma's concussion anymore." And we've talked a lot, as you regulars know. I've had quite a few NFL players, their attorneys, Pop Warner, spouses and families of both military and kids in contact sports who have had concussions and or died from the effects of repeated concussions. But there's a whole segment out there that's larger, I would bet, than the military and folks in contact sports put together, and that's the you and me's, the regular civilians that are walking around out there, that whether it's from a fall, a bump on the head, you open up the medicine cabinet, bend over to get something, forget it's open, boom, stand up, cracking your bean when you get into the car. Any of those sound familiar? A lot of different ways and types of hits that we take, but in everyday life with everyday people, concussion is a reality, a huge reality, and growing all the time. My guest tonight, Bonnie Nish, is Executive Director of Pandora's Collective Outreach Society, a charitable organization in the literary arts in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, of course. Bonnie is an expressive arts therapist who has worked with at-risk populations for the last 20 years. Her first book of poetry, Love and Bones, was released by Karma Press in 2013. Her latest book, an anthology of concussion-related stories, was published in August 2016. You can find her book at Amazon or at Lash Publishing, which is lapublishing.com/concussion-mild-brain-injury-survivors. I'd just go to lapublishing.com and type in Bonnie, B-O-N-N-I-E, Nish, N-I-S-H, into their search window, and that should take you to her book. But the book is called Concussion and Mild Brain Injury, Not Just Another Headline. Gives clear insight into how the lives of those suffering from concussion and mild brain injury are impacted. The individual stories of injury, recovery, and discovery document the effect of the survivor's MBI on immediate and extended family members and social and work communities. With that, I am going to bring on Bonnie Nish. You're on the air. How are you tonight?
I'm great. Thanks, Kim. It's nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, I'm so glad you could be here. And I want people to know right off, and I wanted to tell you in that couple seconds, and I didn't get a chance because we went, I heard him go 5, 4, 3, and I just quickly came over here. But in light of what happened to you, and we want to talk about that a little bit in this conversation, I know that you may not be feeling well, so if there is a point where you need to go or you feel that you need to rest, certainly I'm appreciative that you were even able to make it in the show in light of what just happened to you. But congratulations on your book. And again, just let me know if you're not feeling up to it or you need to go.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll just get right into it then you let me know.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, so tell me, what experience had you had before that led you to thinking it would be a good idea to collect the stories of other people who had had concussion and to write your book? What was a little bit of the background leading up to you deciding to write this book?
Well, it came out of my having two concussions, each a year apart. After the first one, which totally stopped my life, pulled out from under me, I had this thought, but it didn't really, I didn't think I would follow through with it because I was really busy as I was starting to heal and get back to my own life. I was defending my master's thesis, starting a PhD, finishing up becoming a certified expressive arts therapist in my practicum, and going back to a full-time job, and I had three teenagers, and I was running Pandora. So I had a pretty active life before my concussion. But after the second one, which a year later again stopped my life totally, this thought just wouldn't let go of me. And the thought was that you hear about athletes and famous people all the time who've had concussions and what happened to them, but what if you're just an ordinary person on the street like me? Mm-hmm. And what happens to you, and how does it affect not only your life, but everybody around you? Because it has such an impact on everybody. And I think that the general public really needs to know that, because it can happen to anybody. You know,
yes.
I'm not special. It can happen to anybody. And the number of people with concussions that it's happening to, that we're hearing about all the time, is growing. So, yeah, so that was the impetus behind it.
Well, and when I said not your grandmother's concussion, or what I said different things in different posts, I have no idea how old you are, and you don't have to tell, but I'll tell that when I was a kid and they suspected, you know, if you fell off your bike and got what we used to call a goose egg, you know, something like that.
Right.
Something that would be a concussion potential situation. The doctors just kind of, you know, you didn't go to the hospital really or anything. If there was a broken arm or something obvious, you went. But otherwise, if it was suspicion of concussion, it was, they shined the light in your eyes and said not to let you go to sleep or you might wake up dead, something like that. And
yeah,
that was...
Yeah.
Kind of the end of it. They patted you on the rump and your folks unknowingly, and you're off and running. And now we've actually grown to the point, as we're sitting here in the chair today, that and it's not even your grandmother, because as I just said, in my own case, we're talking my mother. It's not your mother's concussion anymore in some of our
right.
cases. That, you know, in one generation, it's changed from something that was looked at as not consequential to being understood as being so consequential that it's become a traumatic brain injury, now classified as a traumatic brain injury or TBI. And so
right.
I thought it would be good to start off the month of brain injury awareness with concussion and the topic for everyday people, like what we're talking about. Because, you know, I think a lot of times, and you can tell me, but there's a lot of people running around out there that may not realize that they even have a concussion. And then obviously there's some with more dramatic symptoms that they know something is wrong and they go find out. But and I'm just going to make it really brief on this point, then I'm going to shut up and let you talk. But what I noticed, and I'd like some of your impressions of the stories, your own circumstance and the collection of stories you wrote, is that one of the reasons for my comment was that about a year and a half ago now, I fell out back and got a whiplash concussion, and now I'm considered to have post-concussion syndrome. And I actually went, and I'm somebody who knows a little bit about brain injury now. For 17 years, after my aneurysm, I didn't know anything about it. Now I do. That's what took me so by surprise, that for 2 months or so, I was getting these bring you to your knees kind of headaches. That was not one of my residuals from my first brain injury. And I was just going like a little robot to the cupboard, taking 4 Advil, going in and taking away all sensory interruption, drawing the shades, turning down any noise, and just laying down in my room, breathing and hoping the headache would pass. And after 2 months, if my mom and my husband wouldn't have mentioned it within a couple days of each other, I'd probably still be doing that. But I took notice because of the comments in such close proximity. And what scared the hell out of me, frankly, is that this had been going on and it hadn't even occurred to me that it wasn't normal. You know, that it wasn't normal for me. It just wasn't normal to four or five times a week having these horrid headaches for that first couple of months, and not realizing, I mean, realizing that my perception was totally askew, yet I was up and, you know, walking around, living my life, but that something was horribly amiss that I wasn't even aware of. That really scared me. And so I can't emphasize enough where people have been groomed, a lot of our audience, to think of concussion as being something not so serious. And to be honest with you, that mild brain injury word, and it's just my thing, is that it's hard to think any trauma to the brain is mild, but I do understand why they say the way they say it. Even my own sponsor does that, you know, mild and moderate.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
if it's your head, it don't feel mild.
feels
wrong.
If you read the stories in this book, you think, well, what's mild about that? I mean, but again, you look at the medical industry and industry where they're coming from, and you think about a really horrible. Well, a lot of these stories were pretty horrible, but, you know, I guess a moderate brain injury, it's even worse. So I guess from their point of view, they have to differentiate. So, when it comes to the brain, there's nothing mild in Spectre. There's nothing mild or easy about it. That's for sure.
Right. Well, and I think they'll come to that. I mean, they just got to the point where they're categorizing these things, you know, recognizing that brain injuries, sometimes I think the survivors, even though I just talked about the perception being off, that the survivors often know more first than the medical profession because we're the experiencers. And
yeah.
They're, you know, it's taken them a while to collect the information. They're working on other things, but this is our life every day when we get up. And so certainly we're going to notice things we have to live with, and they're noticing things they're, you know, reading about. But I think, you know, like in a case like mine, that you probably have some other stories in there where people's thinking they just didn't even realize right off the bat that they even had something that was going to be ongoing, you know, maybe had a blow to the head, saw some stars, felt a little nauseous, and then thought that was the end of it and found out different later on. Did you have any stories like that or experience like
definitely.
Your own?
A story, it's written by a woman whose sister had the brain injury. And at the end of the story, she said, you know, her sister was in total denial that she had a concussion. She didn't believe it. And there's a story of a woman who was in a car accident when she was a teenager, and no one ever treated her for her head injury. It wasn't until much later that she realized some of the things that happened to her were related to the head injury that she had. So it's interesting pulling this book together. There's 19 stories in the book, but we had a lot more come in, and we had to pick the stories that kind of held together cohesively and just that were a good fit together. There were a lot of other really good stories as well. And then as on top of that, people just start to tell you their stories. And you hear a lot of stories about people in a certain age bracket who had accidents or falls who were never treated for concussion, however it happened to them. And it wasn't until later in life that they realized that, oh, now I get it. Now that this is all coming out more, people are starting to put the pieces together of, you know, maybe why they lose words or don't think as clearly in certain areas that they know they did before or have anger issues. There's lots of different stories around that.
Oh, absolutely. I was telling the other day I have a problem with the words, and I see someone here is listening tonight that was here when I told the story, but are you finding yourself really having to, because people with a suspected concussion, you might really want to proofread anything that you're writing, because what I found, and maybe why the post-concussion syndrome label or whatever is because I'm still doing it after a year and a half, but when you, you know, let's say you're typing a letter and you know what you're saying in your mind, right, what you're meaning to say, and so you're typing it out, mm-hmm. and you do that, and I used to be able to do that really well, and then hit send, and I've made the mistake of thinking I can do that. And in the last week, one was really embarrassing, but then I couldn't not, I wasn't laughing at him or when I was on the telephone, but you've got to find a sense of humor. A prospective guest in the future's name is Bobby. And I had found his email and I wrote to him like I wrote to you, but when I hit reply, and I had sent this, I was going to look for the old email to try to track this guy down because we tend to forget and he's supposed to be in mm-hmm. a slot and I hadn't filled him. Anyway, I went back and I found the email and I opened it and I had written, "Dear Booby."
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. I was just horrified that I did that. And then I was sending a text to my mother a few days later, told her that we have four dogs. I told her that I went and bought the dogs. We're all getting older at our house. Four new beds with orthopedic mattresses so they'd have some support. They were kind of had torn up their others. And my mom wrote back and she said, "Do you mean orthopedic?" And I said, "Well, yeah." And I scrolled up to see why she would ask. Yeah, that's what I just said, right? So I scrolled up to see, and I had written orthodox. I don't know why. I bought four orthodox beds for the dogs. And so, you know, I never used to do those kind of things, and that was two in a week. Now, you know, fortunately, my prospective guest, he hadn't written me back, but when I talked to him, you know, we tend to understand in the brain injury community how sure. these things happened or that they do happen and that nothing smart is meant by it or disrespectful or anything. Because you see the right word in your mind when you're typing it. I mean, at least I do. And again, I'm sure you have others when you said problems grabbing the words and mm-hmm. temperament changes or what other types of symptoms. If you had a little list, I don't want to make you think too hard about it, but of even like five or six things that seem to be pretty common. I know everybody's got a different injury, but at the same time, it's to the brain, so there are some similarities. Yeah. But with the 19 stories you wrote in your own experience, are there a half a dozen symptoms that it seems like an awful lot of the people share that have a concussion for some amount of time?
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to say the 19 stories, I didn't write them all. My story is in there, but these are stories written by other people that myself and three other editors went through and picked and edited. So I put the call out, I gathered it, I put the book together, but I didn't write all the stories. So I just wanted to clarify that. But in terms of symptoms that I would say headaches, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, one thing that I found that happened to me was loss of words, but also I lost my ability to speak. I couldn't speak without stuttering. I could think a word. I could rhyme it, but I couldn't say it. And I found more and more I talked to people, the more and more people I met who had that problem, that they were stuttering. And I saw one doctor who told me, that's not a common concussion symptom. You don't have a concussion. And then I saw another doctor who totally disagreed with him. But as I said, the more I've talked to people, the more I've heard from people that either they know someone who had that problem of stuttering or who stuttered the concussion.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely loss of words, being overwhelmed by stimulus, whether it's on the page, looking at the page, lack of memory, impulsivity is a huge one. That was a really big one that surprised me. And it was listening to two guys. I was in a head injury clinic after my first concussion because it was work-related, and listening to two guys there talking to one another saying, oh, I only keep $5 in my pocket when I go out because otherwise I just spend everything. And I realized, oh, I've been really impulsive. That's when I clued in that my going out to go buy a stationary bicycle that I didn't need and I couldn't get out of my head that I needed it was one of those impulses. So
I have that problem. I wasn't going to chalk it up to my brain injury, but okay, I'm going to put it over there. No, I think that's true, the impulsivity. I was laughing at my husband there. You know, I don't watch HSN or QVC, those shopping channels, but there's always one night during the Christmas season that I'll be up late, maybe can't sleep, and I'll be flipping through channels. I'll happen upon one of those channels one time a year, and I will order just about everything they stand up and show and talk about for 7 minutes each or however long it is. You know, I could think of some purpose why I needed that, and all of a sudden a big pile of gifts would come, and Gary is like, who's this for? Who's this for? Oh, this is for us. Oh, this is for us. Oh, this one's for mom. Oh, this one's for us. And every Christmas, it's like this click. One, it's not the only time I have that impulsivity, for sure, but it's kind of an odd, quirky one that I've had like for the last three holiday seasons where the stuff just starts coming. And so we don't always, what you just said is kind of what I said, and that's that we're acting this behavior out, but we don't recognize that as being a little off. You got a cue from the person at work talking about something else that kind of made the light bulb go off over your head, and that's kind of how it was with me with the headaches and the proximity of my mom and my husband was that light bulb over the head of, wow, that, you know, this really has been out of line, out of character, too frequent, abnormal, whatever.
Well, I was just going to say that I think for me, I could see the healing start as I could start to see my behavior was off. I couldn't necessarily change it, but I was starting to see it. If I had a thought in my head, even if I had told it to you 6 times, I could not stop myself from saying the whole thing until I got to the end. And when I started to see I was doing that, to me was a sign I was healing, but I still couldn't say.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that.
Sure. So tell us a little bit about the first one at work. How did that happen, and about how long ago was that?
Okay, so the first one was, it was October or November of 2012. And my day job, I work as a teaching assistant with children, supporting with children with disabilities of all kinds in the school system. And I was working with a child, low-functioning autistic child, who was a known headbutter and biter, so I was always very careful where I placed myself near him because of that. And he was just going back and forth on a zip line, one of those things you hold and just swing across. And as he was getting off, he started to lose his balance. So all I did was stretch my arm out to balance him, and his head came whipping back, and the back of his head caught me right above the temple. And I knew immediately something. I didn't pass out, but I knew immediately something was wrong. It was like this fog came over me. And I went, I called someone over, and then I took him inside, and the teacher I worked with told me to go to the office, and I did, and I sat down, and everything was becoming blurry. And then I was starting to get sharp pains through my head, and I tried to walk down the hallway, and somebody came up to me and grabbed me because I was totally off balance. And then from there, it just started to get worse. I was starting to lose words. I was really, really hyper, or I was really, really numb. I went to a walk-in clinic, and the doctor told me, oh, you have a mild concussion. You should be better, you know, by the end of the weekend. And by the end of the weekend, by the time I saw my doctor on Monday, I had massive headaches. I couldn't stand being in light. I was nauseous. I couldn't stand being in the car. I had started to stutter. And she said I had post-concussion syndrome at that point. And I was supposed to be defending my master's thesis in a week and a half later. The only reason I could do it was because I knew it so well. And the thing was, even though I was losing my words, I could read perfectly off the page. I could read you a page of a book, but then I wouldn't be able to tell you what it was about or what I had just or anything that I had just read. I also couldn't read and retain anything. Yeah, I couldn't – any book that I had already read, I had no because I had started a PhD, there's some books I had already started to read. I had no memory of starting them. The only reason I knew were there were notes in them. But I defended my master's thesis and passed. And it just, you know, I was in it basically in a chair for months. I could barely walk. I couldn't leave my house without anyone because I would lose my balance and just about fall into the street. I'd get stuck places because the noise would be too loud. I couldn't go into the store. A friend took me into a store to do Christmas shopping at Christmas time. I was in there for 5 minutes and I walked out. I was bawling my eyes out because I couldn't stand the noise and the lights, and everything was just so overwhelming for me.
Now, did the doctors give you a heads up on this, or how did any doctors respond to any of this?
Well, so a couple of things happened. One was, at one point, my stuttering was so bad, my brother, who doesn't live here, was quite concerned and made me promise to go to the ER, which I did, because he thought maybe I had a stroke. They did a CAT scan and said there was nothing, and they sent me to a neurologist, and the neurologist said I didn't have a concussion. I had conversion syndrome because the stuttering wasn't normal, and that doesn't happen with concussions. But because it was work-related, WCB was involved, workman's compensation, and they sent me to their head injury clinic. Their neuropsychologist said, no, you have concussion syndrome. Stuttering is very typical with this. You are a classic, you know, example of it. And you're still too acute to even start a head injury clinic at that point. That was around Christmas time. And I was seeing my own doctor, who was amazing, once a week, and I had to take someone with me because I couldn't remember anything that was said. And so when I went to the head injury clinic for their assessment, I had a friend with me the whole time because I knew I wouldn't be able to say anything. And when they did the assessment, I had to fill out these forms, and I just remember filling them out and just bawling my eyes out because I was looking at, as I was filling out, all the things that I couldn't do anymore were kind of slapped in front of my face. And then I went through the head injury clinic, and you know, everyone told me, you know, you'll be better by the end of the weekend. You'll be better in 3 months. You'll be better. And then at the head injury clinic, when I finally did go, they kept saying, 6 months, that's typical. Most people are better. And I wasn't better. And a lot of people there weren't better. But Mm-hmm. You know, the idea was that they were getting you back to work. So I kept saying to my doctor, when am I going to get better? And she kept telling me, you've had a head injury. We can't, nobody can tell you when. You're healing. It's different for everybody. It could be a year. It could be 2 years. It could be 5 years. We don't know.
Yeah,
for sure. And but I did start to heal, and I did go back to work, gradual reentry the following fall. And then on my first day back to work full-time, and I was starting to get my life back. I was starting to do my practice, finish my practicum hours to become certified as a therapist. I was starting to finish. I had defended my master's. I was finishing up all the coursework for the PhD I had started. And I was transitioning into doing a private practice. And then the first day back at work, I got hit full-time. I got hit in the head with a basketball in exactly the same place. And the whole thing started all over again.
God.
Yeah. So I had a trip to New York City.
And that was, I'm sorry.
And I had a cancel.
How many?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, I'm sorry. So, how? What was the time spread between those two? I'm sorry.
So I think it was just less than a year.
Oh, my God. And in the same spot, what are the chances? Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I walked into the school, I was sobbing, and the principal came out and she said, of all the people it had to happen to you, it had to be you. You know, like, she was just beside herself because here I was, I had just gotten back to work, and boom, I was out again. And everything just came back. The light sensitivity, the sound sensitivity, the stuttering, the nausea.
Yeah.
With the first concussion, I had lost my appetite. Oh, it was as though a wall came down, and literally I would have to force feed myself. I couldn't eat anything but grapes and mandarins for the first little while. So it was pretty horrific. At one point I sat down to try to play the piano. Not only couldn't I remember anything, I couldn't play with my hands together, and that was really scary. And what we discovered as well, when I saw the neurologist, he had me put my finger on my nose and then try and touch his finger to the right and then to the left of me. And I couldn't move my finger to the left of me. I was trying to force it, and I couldn't move my finger. And eventually somebody, a physiotherapist I was working with, discovered that I couldn't initiate movement with my left leg. So something was kind of askew in there, and I couldn't touch anything on the left side of me. So we really worked hard in trying to change that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Good gracious.
And then just as you were saying, I'm not feeling that well because I just hit my head again on Sunday. So
well,
I'm a little bit off.
That's what I was going to ask you about. I knew, audience, that Bonnie hit her head, but it was kind of a quick exchange on the email. What happened on Sunday?
It was a fluke again. I was bending. I had bent over and I stood up and whacked the top of my head on the corner of a cupboard.
Oh,
and it
God.
Was immediate. It was so hard. Immediate off balance. Headache, and I've been nauseous ever since, and the stuttering's come back. I've started a new PhD, and I'm taking some time off right now from classes and reading.
Yeah, that reading can be really tough. That's one of the problems I've had, and it disappointed me. I was a voracious reader, loved to read, and now I've got... It's more frustrating to try. Also, it depends on the time of day. You know, I used to read a lot at night, and now, you know, I'm really fatigued at the end of the night, so I'll maybe get a line in, and then, you know, I'm gone. Or if I try to read earlier in the day, I'll find that I'm reading along I think I'm reading along, but you know, you get to the end of the paragraph and I can't really remember exactly what I read. And so it'd be really hard for me to get through a book. And so I guess maybe I'll switch to audio for a little while, but in any case, that's difficult. Did you find, and I'm sorry that that happened to you Sunday, and those are the kind of fluke things that we're talking about. I thought I would mention just real quick, the National Safety Council, falls have gotten to be so, falls, I know you didn't have a fall, you bumped your head on the cabinet, but, you know, they've come out with a whole new fall prevention program just due to the fact that so many people are getting head injuries as a result of falls, and they have a lot of tips like throw rugs, placement of furniture, being extra mindful of pets. You know, a lot of people trip on their pet or their the leash, something like that, or the throw rugs that you have laying around. And I can't help but think back again, won't bring up your age, but I was around when those black and whites of the Dick Van Dyke Show were on. And remember in the beginning, he would always walk in and trip as he came in. And so one of the things that I continue to hear that there's science behind now is that if you've suffered one brain injury, be that a concussion or otherwise, or you're a smorgasbord, you know, maybe you're an aneurysm and a concussion and maybe a car accident where you've had another type of TBI or a stroke, an ABI, that it's looking like people who have had one brain trauma are more likely to have other brain trauma or traumas than somebody who's never had one before. I can't remember where I was reading that study, but it was a credible study, and I've read those facts more than once. Is it your opinion? It's kind of my opinion, because some of that brain fog and inability to concentrate as hard when I'm just kind of moving about in my life, unless I'm very intent, like if I'm not really allowed in the kitchen anymore, but if I were in the kitchen, I'd have to just sit there and watch until whatever was finished and focus hard on something. But if I'm just living my life and kind of bouncing around doing whatever I'm doing in my life, then I'm maybe not as aware of my environment because I'm not focusing with the same level of intensity I did before or something like that. What do you think? And based on the stories in the book, was it also showing through other people's stories that they were having multiple incidences?
A lot of the stories were about one particular incident, so it wasn't showing so much there, but I do know I have heard from a number of people, and like you, I've read it as well, that, and my doctor has told me that once you've had a brain injury, you're definitely more susceptible to it. So but I hadn't thought about the fact that I'm just not as aware in the same way as I was before. And I think that's a really good point. A friend of mine keeps asking me if my periphery vision is askew because of the concussion. But as I said, with this one, I was bent over and just stood up into the shelf. So, So just,
I just find my mind wandering and I'm thinking of something else, or, you know, maybe I call it something shiny, you know, maybe I'm out taking a walk and I focus on a bird that's just flown by and where he landed and, you know, if he's got a worm in his mouth or whatever, and I miss the crack in the sidewalk right in front of me, that kind of a thing. You know, my attention just kind of wanders, and I'm maybe not, like I said, paying the same kind of attention.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because in all those articles it does, you know, give those facts,
yeah,
statistics to support it, but it doesn't really draw any conclusions as to why, and I can only assume it's because of the residuals that we're left with, that they're playing into that somehow.
And I would think that's a good guess. I mean, just from what I know of myself, that's probably a very good guess. And as I said, I hadn't really thought about it before in that way, but I think that's fair to say. So,
wow. And how many times that's happened to people who, the cabinet, that was one of the examples I used in the very beginning, and I had no idea that that's what had happened to you. But, you know, after having one of my observations, and again, you might not have in those particular stories gotten them, but heard as you were looking, is that when it seems like the level of intensity, well, and you described it with yourself, you know, you get the first brain injury and you get some resolution of some of those residuals. But then when you get the next brain injury, some of the originals refire with a greater intensity, and then you often get a couple bonuses that didn't come with the first one. So it seems like not only are we more likely to have subsequent types of brain injuries if we've had one, but that seldom are they milder, because they seem to exacerbate issues that we've already dealt with or are dealing with at some point in time.
And I totally agree with that. I mean, I know with the second concussion, everything came back immediately. Mm-hmm. The one thing that never went away with the first concussion, I got buzzing in my head, and that's never gone away. It just gets exasperated if I'm tired or worse, or if I'm concentrating really hard. When I'm reading, it gets really loud, to the point where I go to bed at night, I have to have something on to block it out. So,
is that like the tinnitus with your ears, or your whole head is having a buzzing sensation?
No, it's my whole head buzzing.
My goodness.
So, yeah. So, yeah, the joys of things that you never ever thought would happen to you.
Yes, absolutely.
Why I thought it was so important to do this book. And the stories are such a cross-section of people and things that happened to them, that it's everything from a woman getting in her van to take her daughters on a holiday, and the van door slit and hit her in the head. And she said, wow, that hurt, went and got ice pack and started traveling. And then she had a major, major concussion. She sold her house and moved into a two-bedroom condo, and then bought a two-bedroom condo, and then forgot until Thanksgiving dinner and told everyone in their family, oh, by the way, we're moving.
Oh, gosh.
So,
no.
Yeah.
Okay, this is good. I don't want you to give the book away or anything, but can you... Obviously, that was enough to not give away a story, but tell something different about the story. Can you mention maybe a couple of others that might stand out in your mind, and how they acquired their concussions?
Yeah, there was one woman, and you know, some of these people I never had met, and we did a huge book launch last September. In Vancouver for the book, and I got to meet not everybody, because not everybody lives in Vancouver who is in the book. There's actually one woman from the States, but I got to meet quite a number of the people in the book. And this one woman was a dancer, and she was dancing for, I think, Walt Disney Studios in Japan. Mm. And I think she got hit by a taxi cab. And it totally changed her life. Absolutely, yeah. And her family had to fly, go home. And then also the interesting thing was they talked about the difference in care that she got between Japan and Canada and the way they dealt with concussions. So that was really interesting. You know, living, her story was called Living the Dream, and she really was living the dream. And, yeah. Another story, as I said, was the one about the woman whose van door slid into her. There was one story that was written by a woman about her nephew who was young and had just started his job, and somebody asked him to climb a ladder, and he fell, I don't know how many feet, onto a concrete floor and sustained a brain injury that way, and just what their family went through. And, I mean, you know, he came back and eventually, and but just the horror of watching her nephew go through that. So my own daughter wrote a story that's in the book, what it was like to live with me, my youngest daughter. I have three children, and how hard it was to watch, you know, she said, me become a shell of a person. And the anger that she went through at different points, because suddenly she became the parent, and I was totally dependent on her. She was, I think, 19 at the time, 18, 19. Still going to school. And suddenly she was doing all the shopping and finding my cell phone and my keys in weird places. I'd leave my key in the door at night if we had gone out for a walk. I'd leave the oven on. That was the thing that scared her the most, was me leaving the oven on.
Yeah. We've got that at my house, the stove. It's the stove, not the oven in our case. But so you do talk about the family members, because there's always usually going to be loved ones or family members or friends or people that are going to be impacted by these injuries that we have. And I can imagine... I'd like to read your daughter's story, because I'm betting when, you know, everybody, and I don't think people understand this about us, and that's that we had a role, you know, we had skin that we fit in, you know, we had a role before, and they had a role before. And you, like you say, pull the tablecloth of life out from underneath with no warning, no handbook, not a very knowledgeable traditional medical model that can give us, no pun intended, a heads up on some of these things. And then people's roles are reversed. And, of course, we're kind of grieving. Well, first, we're wondering what in the hell happened. But, yeah, second, you know, we're kind of grieving and scared, I was, you know, of the losses of some of these cognitive functions and so forth, wondering if they were going to come back or heal, because I got the same discouraging answers as you. Could be 2 weeks, could be 2 months, could be 2 years, could be never. Well, thanks. Yeah. You know, that's great news to hear. But how that impacts the other family members, because their roles are forced to change as well when you're part of a little community, whether it's a couple or a family, when one role changes, everyone's role is forced to change. And that can be, as you know, such a precarious place because nobody wanted to change roles. And I think it's important for the family members to remember that. You know, nobody was getting up that morning thinking it would be a fun idea to change roles and see how that would work out and try to be a little bit more understanding and understand that it's a given on both sides, that it's very frustrating, both for the survivor and the caregivers or family members who are called upon more than they were before. Especially, no offense, you've probably got the perfect teenage daughter, but I wasn't the perfect teenage daughter at that age. And I wasn't, you know, expected to do too much but get good grades and whatever else I was doing. And so it would have been a big interruption, you know, in my life at that time and what I was doing to have to be so responsible and, you know, do things for my family that they have been taking care of me and for me in my whole conscious life. So that's difficult.
Well,
tonight.
This is, if I can just read this, it's from my daughter's story, Secondhand Concussion. And she said, I didn't realize how difficult every day would be after my mom's initial concussion. I assumed I would check on her throughout the night and soon enough our lives would keep going as usual. However, everything within our lives drastically changed overnight. Her speech started to go and it became a guessing game as to what she was trying so desperately to get out. She slept most of the day, became depressed, couldn't walk a straight line, couldn't drive, and couldn't eat. Her usual keep busy personality was gone for the time being, and it was a strange light in which to see her. I didn't fully realize the amount I had taken on until I started to take out on others instead of telling my mom I couldn't do all of this by myself. There is a huge shift when someone can't communicate properly and is struggling to gain some form of self back. It is hard to watch and especially hard knowing there isn't a huge amount you can do for them. And then, you know, she goes on to talk about she wasn't going to sit back and just let me go through it alone, but about the, you know, how her life changed and she became the primary household shopper and cleaner and form of comfort, and how frustrating it was because people were always telling her to look after me, and she was doing that. And yeah, so it was really, and I can't read this without crying every time I read it. So,
I bet.
Yeah. So, and when you're in the middle of it, you don't realize it because it's just the way it is.
Right.
So you can't, somebody said to me, did you realize how hard it was for her? And you don't realize it because you're just in the middle of it. And it's not until you come through it and you start to heal and that you realize how much it impacted. I mean, you do realize it, but you don't because you can't help it because you're such a basket case, or at least I was. I was comatose at some point. So,
well, yeah, you're a little busy being clueless and trying to keep yourself together and scramble back those functions. It's almost like having a jigsaw puzzle and it getting knocked over and the pieces flying everywhere and you're scrambling, you know, trying to get those pieces together. So it's really kind of hard, you know, real hard to try to look at what's going on with other people around us when we're so focused on trying to figure out what's going on with us because it's so confusing. And again, I think your book, you know, the book is out. Again, congratulations. The name of the book, folks, for anyone who came in late, is Concussion and Mild Brain Injury, Not Just Another Headline. And it gives a clear insight into how the lives of those suffering from concussion and mild brain injury are impacted. It's a culmination of 19 different stories, survivor stories, and it documents what the effects of their brain injury were on both themselves and their extended families, their families and extended families, and society overall. Because did you draw a conclusion when you're looking at the numbers of people that are having these kind of injuries each year in the private sector, we'll say, and what impact that must have on the medical community, the economic community, jobs, so forth?
Oh, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. Because, A, it's huge on the medical community because you have to support somebody with a concussion in so many ways, and it's got to be continuous. And you're starting to see more and more help out there. And then for their families, and employers. My point, I wrote something somewhere that I wanted this to be insightful, not just to people who had concussions so they don't feel so alone and their families, but also to employers and anybody out there so they can understand what people are going through. There's a reason somebody's sitting in a dark room with sunglasses on.
Yeah.
I'm not
laughing at you, laughing with you. There's so many
people
you can kind of pick up. You know, it's not funny, but you can kind of get the tells. I couldn't, at the same time, while we're oblivious to some of our own sometimes, I can sometimes recognize potential brain injury in other people now that I've had mine for a long time and talked to so many people like yourself, and like, you know, you were reading about all the stories that were submitted, and what a deal.
Well, and like the woman again who's van door slammed in front of her. She was a teacher, and at one point she finally had to admit that she was having trouble. She had to take a leave for a little bit because she wasn't remembering things in her class. And it's just, and I talked to other people as well who, after the book was published as well, who had brain injuries and their job was affected, and some very high functioning people who go back to jobs and suddenly find they can't do them. And I talked to another woman who had been doing her PhD, and she had to stop because she just couldn't function that way anymore. So it has such a huge impact on people's lives in so many ways. It just, sometimes it takes time to get back to that place, and sometimes you never do. When I went back to do this PhD, I realized there were certain things I lost, and I might never get back. I'm trying to get them back, but I don't know if they're going to come back. I'm lucky because I've been able to do it, but it's coming much slower than it did before. My ability to read and comprehend things as fast as I used to, is it there for sure?
Well, I understand that. And I too, I'm one of those people. I was a financial consultant for 26 years and doing very well for myself. And then I did go back to work. Luckily, I had been self-employed for a long time, and I actually made it a lot longer than a lot of people would if they would have been in a regular 8-to-5 kind of job. I don't think they would have gotten by quite as long as I did, faking it, if you will. I was also in sales, so, you know, saying that I had a sales appointment and really going home and taking a nap, you know, that sort of thing. But eventually I had to stop, and it was because, you know, when the financial services industry had kind of a big tumble, reassessment, let's say, the bottom line is that everything had been hardwired into my brain, all of that knowledge, because I spent 27 years doing it. But when a change came into the industry that made compliance start coming down in full forests full of trees, paper, and they were changing rules and all these compliance factors and threatening, you know, legalese is always very threatening, you know, when they send it out. And, you know, I looked at the prospects of, you know, if I were to make a mistake, not only losing a license, but large fines or imprisonment, you know, when you're managing people's money, that's not the place to make a mistake. And so I needed to walk away, and that was walk away before I was found out and forced away. And, you know, that's not going to be something I'm going to be able to ever go back and do. And I was a little long in the tooth, you know, at that point to be starting a whole new career. Not that I wouldn't have, but I wondered, I seriously wondered if I'd lived long enough to pay back student loans based on, you know, some of the things I was thinking of taking, and probably fear of getting through, you know, some of the classes to do that. And so it is sad, because then you go through a horrible slump. You know, you can't go back to your old life, and you don't know what your new life is going to look like yet. You can't rest on the laurels of good things you've done in the past. You've got to give yourself a purpose to keep moving forward. And I think that is a huge takeaway that I got, is just that I can really, you know, I can have my pity parties on some days or feel, and one of my acronyms you brought up, when you're tired, things get worse earlier. And I use HALT if I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, or any one or combination of those things, then I'm worse. If I'm grumpy, I'm grumpier.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm dead fatigued, then I'm much worse dead fatigued, and I got to go lay down right now. Whatever symptom is flaring, it flares a lot worse and a lot harder if I'm not well-rested, well-nourished, and those kind of things. So many contributing factors. And then in our area, and I'm sure yours in Canada, I don't know if the weather has the same effect on you, but when our barometric pressure changes, or it's way too cold or way too hot, any of the extremes in weather, that also gets my symptoms going.
Okay. Well, except for this, you know, Vancouver tends to be a little more moderate, except for this. I mean, we don't get the extremes that you do. You're in Ohio or somewhere in the middle of the country, I think. So you tend to get more extremes than we have here. But we do have pressure changes for sure. And I'm sure that affects it. I mean, if I've overdone it, if I'm tired, there's lots of factors that can, the symptoms, for sure.
Have you thought of, when you thought that it would be a good idea to put this anthology of stories together to help survivors, caregivers, loved ones, employers, others, see an example of the variety of ways that people can acquire a concussion and how they can be affected. A lot of different stories of real live effects that people walk away from with these things. And helping, what we're helping to do, talking about it tonight and you writing the book, is changing society's old idea, you know, about, I mean, there's been in medicine all kinds of advances in history, and there's things that at one point would have been thought of as, oh, no, that'll never happen. Cure to smallpox, no way, you know. But yet things do change, and they do learn more, and now we have learned a lot more about concussion and the fact that it is considered to be a form of traumatic brain injury. And I think that educating everyone we're trying to educate with shows like this, again, survivors who may be walking around out there right now with the effects of a concussion and they don't even realize they have a concussion, to loved ones, other survivors who have had more severe effects, and they're in that what I call tweener stage, where, you know, it's a kind of a very scary, depressing time when you can't go back, but you don't know what's ahead. And then again, survivors, and thank you for sharing the, you know, the part of the story that your daughter wrote to get the perspective of the caregivers and so forth. And then the effects that it has on jobs, healthcare, and the society overall, because I don't think people think about that. There's still a lot of people out there that, you know, I was watching a show the other night, and again, this one goes back to a minute for the sports, but you could see it in anything. You could see it on a playground. Let's just use a playground and kids. You know, there could be a kid playing out on the monkey bars, fall off the monkey bars and bounce, you know, his or her head on the dirt, and, you know, maybe get up a little bit slow, and then kids kind of naturally have energy and adrenaline and start running around again, and suddenly, you know, they can't a lot of times communicate any more than we could, right, when we didn't know. But things might be noticed, like, in the homework, you know, the reading slower, the getting, it used to take 20 minutes to do the homework. Now the kid is, and he did it with a whiz, and now it's taken an hour, and he's struggling. Sleep disorders, behavior problems, all of a sudden, where a kid didn't have behavior problems before. If that's something that you're looking at with your kids, any of the listeners out there, you might ask your child if they've hit their head, if they've, you know, fallen off a piece of equipment or fallen off their bike or whatever it might be. If your child is suddenly struggling in a cognitive or behavioral way than they have before, it may be a result of a head injury that they didn't think anything of at the time it happened, because, of course, everybody falls down when you're a kid at some point, wrestling or doing whatever, and yet it could be something that really needs to be watched, because what you don't want to do is, while you're in process of recovering from one, you don't want to take on another, in as much as you can have any control over that, because you don't want to wind up with a second impact syndrome situation or start accruing those repeated brain traumas. Because now, unfortunately, we're also seeing science that can lead to degenerative brain diseases later in life. And, you know, I want to leave things more upbeat, and we will in just a second, but my last comment on that is just that, it, you know, this isn't an easy straw to pull of the things that can happen in life. A lot of us don't have any visible tell, but when you live in the fear and struggle, or even the faith and struggle, of having these residuals from a brain injury, and you have it like I'm 17 years out. Well, actually, I'm more than that. It was 17. 20 plus years out on the first and a year and a half on the second that I know of. And, you know, to think of all of the suffering, compromise, going to doctor's offices, getting hope up, hope down, hope up, hope down, you know, disappointment. Mm-hmm. To think of, you know, that rolling into some kind of a degenerative brain disease later on is really something that makes me have to stay in the day and in the moment and make each day count, give back. Mm-hmm. You know, be of service, do things like you're doing and what I'm trying to do, which is to get word out to people, because if there are some things that can be done to help various sorts of therapy by getting that diagnosis in the first place, you know, that therapy, the earlier the better, may help some of those symptoms or rid you of some of those symptoms, depending on who you are and what your situation is, and perhaps keep you from having a repeated concussion too soon, which can lead, as we know, to all kinds of more severe problems. But when you decided to do this book, did you do kind of a shout out that I missed about, because I'm wondering when you said
it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So next time what you should do, I know you just did this, so you're, and had a concussion to boot on Sunday, so you're in no mood to look at it now, but you did say that you got a lot of other stories, and I'm sure there's a lot of people listening tonight that you would have more than enough stories to make volume two of this book at some point. And I hope with whatever means you used as a shout out to get some story submissions, that you'll let me know if and when you decide to do volume two of this, and I can announce it on the show and give you some more stories to choose from, because I think this is a time that's important. We really need to keep hammering away at the concept of concussion. It was really only a year ago Christmas that the movie came out, and there were people, I mean, the NFL's known for years, okay? The military has known for years, regardless of what anyone wants to say. I really don't think doctors did, and regular people like you wrote this book for probably didn't. And because it started around football, you know, and people are so damn protective of that, I think some of the message of concussion and how dangerous it is was lost by people still wanting and in denial to be so protective of football that they didn't want to see the reality of the danger of concussion, whether it's one big one or repeated smaller ones or any combination thereof. In one light, it on one hand, I mean, it really brought the concept of concussion and the dangers to the light. But on the other side, because it did have to do with football, some people just shut their minds off at that point, being protective of something that's been an American staple for a long time, and just didn't want to hear the rest because it's unpleasant. How good could you feel about tuning in, buying merchandise, subsidizing that happening to people? And so the natural thing to do is going to be to ignore that it's as serious as it is and try to enjoy the game. Well, you know, now we're talking about something that's not a game. It's you. It's your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your friend, just people off the street that you know who aren't necessarily in the military or playing any sports. They're just living their life.
Yeah.
And there's so many ways that we can take blows to the head, and so many variants how we react to that initially, if you can mm-hmm. tell that it's a concussion or not, or if the symptoms are delayed. I know that you're probably getting tired. Is there something that you'd like to leave us with? Any point you'd like to leave us with? I know that, again, folks who just came in, Bonnie Nish is an author. I'll read you some information when she leaves about her book. But unfortunately, this multiple concussion survivor just had another concussion just on Sunday, and I'm grateful she was able to make it to the first show of Brain Injury Awareness Month tonight in spite of this new concussion. And so any closing remarks that you'd like to make, and then I'll make sure to give all the credits and where to find the book when I let you go.
A couple of things. I just wanted to respond to a couple of things that you were saying. One is that there will be at least a second book, because I've had this in my head for a while, but you just gave me the idea for a third. When I have healed and I have some time, I would like to do a book of stories of kids who have had concussions and get their stories out there too, because there's a lot of kids, not just athletes, but teenagers, kids who are suffering them as well. Playgrounds, mm-hmm. however it's happening. And then I think I will get the word out to you that when I do another book, because these stories I think are really important. And then just going back to the athletes for a minute, there's another new movie out called Ice Guardians. It's a documentary that's been getting rave reviews about hockey players, the enforcers, who suffered multiple blows to the head over the years, and what happened mm-hmm. to them, and how, you know, it wasn't talked about because that was their job and their livelihood, and what and how that is now starting to change as well. And that whole controversy in hockey about the fighting and the blows to the, you know, that is fan driven as well. So and industry based, and as you said, with football, people don't want to hear that other side because there's such a love for the sport and blows seem to be part of it. And now that's changing. People don't want their kids going out and playing football anymore. They don't want their kids playing hockey and getting hit in the head, because we realize what that does to them and the impact it has. And I think this book just reinforces that.
Good.
It can happen to anybody, you know, and that be mindful of your brain. I just want to say that and you're right, I am starting to get very tired. My head is starting to sink a little bit, but before I go totally sink, I just wanted to, A, thank you for having me on, and B, that anybody who's out there who is struggling, know that you're not alone. When we did the book launch, we opened with a poem from the book that I wrote, and I worked with a dancer, and at the end of my reading it, my children came up, and she went around the room. We had given everybody who came into the room who had, and there were, I think, 80 people at the book launch, and we gave everybody who had had a concussion a candle. And she went around the room and lit the candles. And then we asked everybody who had been affected by someone who had a concussion to touch somebody who was holding a candle. And there was such, the room was just full of so much emotion. It was just so powerful. And one of the women who was in the book sent me a note after and said, I have never felt such community, sense of togetherness. And every time when I am struggling alone with my symptoms, I am going to light my candle and think of that night, and I won't feel alone anymore. And that is what we're trying with the book. So so.
Can you read the poem? Do you have a book handy?
I do.
We could at least hear that part, and I think that is great while you're looking for it. And yes, definitely, you know, it started with football, but it's extended to any contact sport. We're having people coming out of WWE, hockey, soccer, cheer, you know, women's sports, men's sports.
Yeah.
So it's really anything that agitates repeated trauma to the head. It just happened to start with football because that's where the brain started collecting after the autopsies and the like symptoms. And so they were busted there, but it's a danger in any contact sport. And helmets aren't the solution. Let me say that loud enough. And did you find your poem?
I did. It's a little long, but I'll read it anyway. And then, the stuttering is starting. So I'll read the poem, and then I'm going to hang up.
Take your time.
Thank you again. Okay, so the inner working of an injured brain trying to find the way home. What I write here, submuted, this impossible story I have carried for the last year, a concussed brain weary of a drum roll of irregular beats marching down a road carved out by an accident. My words become dead men coming now six in a row, walking tympanists who trip over one another when the bandmaster isn't looking, the meter just a bit imbalanced. I lie on my bed, the slightest movement causing the room to swirl, try to forget the indignity of losing self. I lie still, begin to visualize a big gray dog on the front porch of a blue wood house. I can feel the porch beams wrapped tightly around him, and my narrative changes, even if briefly. He watches herons rest, the white oak across the street, sheltering the simple outcome of nesting that eludes his gaze. Then all at once, everything begins to run from me into a world that has its own story to tell. The rocking chair behind him stooped at an odd angle, stopped, arms dropped, an old man's breath lost mid-flight and the sudden explosion of a brain exploding. On the other side of the road, a baby, a mother's full breast and lullabies, drapes a blanket across a chilling day. The sound of a spirit shattering, the herons disturbed, search the sky for unseen predators, and I remove myself, my head spinning with possibilities of what is to come next. Out of focus, I turn to YouTube disaster videos, try to find my own sadness that hides a blow to my body I can barely speak of. My mind's still hazy, bits of stories that leak from a faucet I can't turn off. The city where I met you lingers, pours out in an unrecognizable shape, no blissful reminiscence, just something misplaced. Herons wait for the sun to lift them off the history woodpile, now just a tiny blur on a horizon that won't open. A low-lying bridge over an ocean threatening to collapse, and I can't cross over to glimpse a fuller picture. I turn to my memory of you for help. Realize too late you were only a hollow man sitting on a dock fishing who could not hold the shade of night in the sky or whisper in a dying soldier's ear that their mother was waiting on the other side. My story slipped behind a cloud of metaphor I did not mean to use to describe how empty I am without you, without identity, without my words. Behind the keys that bring letters into alignment, engulfing fog, birds intrude, the constant buzzing between my ears, the herons circle lower, a dog caught in despair, a new mother in just a nightshirt running across the street to find an old man dead. The moon swallows all of us, a blank book in my hands, stories mixed together, stunned, hopeless, defiant, to find the way home. And that is that.
Beautiful.
So,
yeah,
that's
beautiful. Well, I'd like to thank you so much, Bonnie Nish, for being here. I'm going to go ahead and let you go, and I'll read your information of where to find the book. And
And I've got a, you know, I might be able to help you with some stories too. Not that you can't put the call out and get tons of them, but we might want to talk about that new book you're thinking of writing, because I might be able to help you a little bit.
No, I think that's great. I think the more cross-section we get, the better. So,
yeah.
And we did put the call out. We tried to get more from the States, but we didn't get a lot back. So,
well, make sure you do, since I'm here in the States and on every Wednesday, and we've got the host, we'll get stories from the States. But I also someday would like you to come back and talk about being an expressive arts therapist, because, you know, you did work in at-risk populations. We're one of those, and you did work in that for a long time. So I'd like to talk about that. One of the things we've done is opened up a Facebook page. It's called Disability Art Month, and although the month has gone on forever, but it's Disability Art Month. The people are coming in and not only doing in the literary way, you know, writing poetry and sharing some things. Mm-hmm. We ask people to go in who hadn't thought of themselves as being artistic, because we saw a trend in people with brain injury that if they had been artistic before, they still were. And if they hadn't been, a lot of them picked up things that were artistic. And so we started this page, and we're getting a lot of cool stories and art and poetry and other written pieces. So I'd like you to come back and talk about that form of therapy at some time too. But Bonnie, thank you so much for being here. And I pray that you heal quickly from this concussion, get some rest, and take care.
Thank you,
Kim. All right. Good night.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody. That was Bonnie Nish. Again, just came out in August 2016 with the book Concussion and Mild Brain Injury, Not Just Another Headline. And you can find that at Lash Publishing, which is lapublishing.com, or on Amazon. If you go to Amazon and you look up Bonnie Nish, N-I-S-H, you're going to be able to find her book. Her poetry book will probably come up, Love and Bones, but you'll know the one, Concussion and Mild Brain Injury, and see that book. And I want to thank her for coming here tonight and for the anthology. Remember, I think, you know, it's going to be a while since this one came out, but I wouldn't be surprised if later in the year they were doing a shout out for more stories. And when that time comes, I'll be sure to let you guys know. As you heard, she was from Canada, is from Canada, and they didn't get a lot of submissions from the U.S., so we'll make sure that that's different this next time around. I'm going to grab a quick drink. We'll come back for the back portion of the show. One thing that this lady certainly is, and the 19 people that shared their stories in the anthology, one thing they all have in common, and everybody recognizing Brain Injury Awareness Month, is this is Hannah Kerr with Warrior. And we all have to have that warrior spirit to get down this path.
Believing, if in the dark there is a light, your truth that keeps on.
That was Hannah Kerr. You can find her at hannahkerrmusic.com, or if you want to like her, Hannah Kerr Music on Facebook. Some great music. So I am going to play a quick song, get another drink. The number here is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. And if you would like to talk, just press 1 and I'll know it. Excuse me, all this fluctuating weather here in the Midwest has given me a frog. Some of you know yesterday was Fat Tuesday. That signals Mardi Gras down in New Orleans. I love Cajun food, and there's such a wide culture and wonderful music and wonderful food down in New Orleans. And I really like to dance. I've liked to dance my whole life. And I love parades. And so there's a lot about Mardi Gras that I do like. And Fat Tuesday was, of course. And then coming up the 17th is going to be St. Patrick's Day. But one of the things I was going to recommend to you, if you're on YouTube out there, if you were not aware, I know you guys who get Netflix and Redbox and things like that can get old series. And I think this series, I don't know how long it went on, probably 4 seasons maybe. But there was a series on HBO called Treme, T-R-E-M-E, French word, Treme. And if you look for the title song, if you put in the search on YouTube, Treme, the series, I'm sorry, I can't find the word, the song that plays with the beginning of a show, the show introduction song for Treme, watch that, get a little flavor of the Mardi Gras going on. And, you know, I was thinking about it when I was posing, when I got my fingernails painted green with a different color green polka dots, and I had on the sequin green bow the other day and was doing hammy kind of selfies in the hobby store, so I didn't have to buy all that stuff. You know, you can have a good time. Sometimes we get a brain injury and we think our life is over and we're in that dark hole. And it is, in some regards. It's over in the way we once knew it. But we have the power to be able to recreate, to take assessment of what we got left, what other cards we got to deal with. And then where their placement would be, and we're going to learn by trial and error. But as we make attempts, we get empowered. As we get empowered, we're more hopeful. As we're more hopeful, we have a more positive attitude. As we have a more positive attitude, actions start happening. And if we are open to it, opportunities pop up of all kinds that help give us purpose, help show us fun, a way to laugh with others, laugh at ourselves, all kinds of different ideas. But what I've got to offer in the blues isn't about New Orleans, but this is Honey Boy Turner Blues, and Honey Boy has played down in New Orleans, but right now he's playing about where he's from. What a coincidence. Be right back.
Woke up. up this morning with them blues for Omaha. Woke up this morning with them blues for Omaha. Can't afford no bus ticket, sure ain't got no car. Kansas to my south, Colorado to my west, I wanna go east to the place I love the best. Got stuck in Lincoln with the blues for Omaha. Can't afford a bus ticket, might have to steal myself a car. That's what I'm saying.
Omaha. That's as close as I can get you to the Mardi Gras tonight. But have a beignet on me. We did Fat Tuesday a little early when we were downtown and had some great Cajun food. I love it. But I'm all greened out waiting for St. Patrick's Day. That's part of my heritage, as a matter of fact. I'm Italian and Irish. So I drive a Arrest Me Red Fiat and love corned beef. Or I used to say Irish and Italian, it meant that I was a great lover and a great fighter, sometimes concurrently. And then I kind of quit telling that joke. Oh, boy. That's something. There was something else I was going to look for here, but, you know, another thing we'd be remiss in doing, recognizing on this first day of Brain Injury Awareness Month, we talk about the awareness, but a lot of us have known people who haven't made it through these brain injuries, and we've lost them. And the author of this song, Kevin Harrison, wrote a song called See You Soon, And Kevin Harrison, let me see, I've got his, sorry, found the song and not the, he was one of the early people on my playlist. Okay. On Facebook. If you're on Facebook, you might go to Kevin Harrison Music and like him. You don't know if you like him yet, do you? Take my word for it, you will. Or his website, KevinHarrisonMusic.com. And he's in the New York area. And if we take a moment of silence, send up a prayer, give a thought to one of those that we've loved and lost in this journey through brain injury, that's part of the awareness, is that we lose a lot of people through brain injury, whether it's the brain injury directly or self-medicating later or self-harming later because we can't adjust to the new hand we've been dealt. So this goes out to them. And I'll be back in about 3 minutes. This is See You Soon by Kevin Harrison.
Thank you.
That was Kevin Harrison with Kevin Harrison Music. Something I've been doing each week, and again, the first day of Brain Injury Awareness Month, I think this is a good thing to read. I've been reading it a lot lately because now the word, the letters TBI are getting tossed around a lot all of a sudden, and just about every TV show you turn on, people think they know something about brain injury. Now, maybe not to those that have lived with them for a long time, but on hospital shows and stuff, people are having head injuries, and, you know, we don't see their lives after. It's the TV. But some of the things that maybe people aren't getting out of the TV shows and haven't understood if they don't know a survivor, or maybe haven't taken inventory if they are a survivor, is I noticed a thing that was the top 10. It said this, but I've edited it, and there's no, I'd credit the person, but there was no credit on it. It was just typed on a piece of paper, a pink page that I saw on Facebook. But so I'm not trying to nix anybody, not my material, but I would add two things to it, of course, and redo what they did. It says, next time you're tempted to imply that we're making excuses, understand that most TBI survivors will be left with a combination of these symptoms. Number one, short-term memory loss. Number two, trouble focusing our attention. Three, neurofatigue, running out of energy. Number four, dizziness and balance issues. Number five, cognitive deficits, processing things slower than we did before. Number six, aphasia, trouble recalling or understanding words. Number seven, not being able to handle overstimulation, i.e. people, music. Eight, anxiety about the slightest things. Nine, depression. 10, chronic pain. In short, we are not making excuses. We are simply doing the best we can with what we've been given. The 11 and 12 I would add to that would be sleep issues as number 11 and seizures. I hear an awful lot of stories on here where, along with a brain injury of any variety, come seizures. And I have learned a little more about that since I got here. I used to think of seizures as being the full-blown grand mal seizure, and have found out that there is a lot of variety in seizures. Some people have focal seizures and other types where it's not even noticeable. It's kind of, for a drinker who understands what a blackout is, sometimes it can just be that. The person doesn't remember. They're missing time. So, again, that would be 12 things. Now, I know that some might think that neurofatigue, which was number four, covers, and it says in parentheses, running out of energy, that that also covers sleep issues, but it really doesn't. Sleep issues can be literal. Either you're sleeping too much, you can't get to sleep at all, you have fitful sleep, you wake up in a non-restorative fashion. Now that might give you some neurofatigue, but I also think of neurofatigue, running out of energy, as being a mental thing too. The other night I was saying to myself, I was mentally fatigued. I needed to go lay down. I didn't feel like I was particularly tired that day, you know, like exhausted because I did too much physically, or even about my sleep issues, but I had had to think too much, which required focus, and then communicate. I had to talk to a lot of people on the phone about a lot of sensitive topics, so I had to be mindful of what I was saying, and it wore me out. It gave me neural fatigue to do that. So I think there's a lot of kind of fatigue. We can be to the bone physically fatigued, but we can also be extremely mentally fatigued. And that's when we start making a lot of mistakes, and it's probably better if we come back, you know, come back to something and, you know, not wind up having it take twice as much time. Certainly, we don't want it to take twice as much time. But this is somewhere I hope to land tonight, and I know I've landed here a lot of times. So if any of us that are alive listening, not that we would not be alive listening, although we might not be. You never know, do you? This is Soul Crush with Arms of Grace.